I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungine, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, June 10th, episode 89 of Pandemic, and it's also the day when I got vaccinated. Well, half vaccinated, listener. My visit for the jab this morning was just after I recorded the interview you'll be hearing in just a moment. The mood at the centre was pretty upbeat, with a nod to Monty Python's Life of Brian from one volunteer. Crucifixion, he inquired, of people exiting their cars in the car park between the vaccine centre and the testing centre. It was all done in about half an hour. No ill effects so far. Now, in today's episode, we're going to look at Taiwan, a standout example of virus management since last year. At least it was until May. Since then, numbers have spiked steadily over the past few weeks and deaths have increased 5,000%. Samson Ellis is Bloomberg's Taipei bureau chief. He spoke to us last July. He spoke to us again today. He's up next.
Hello there.
Hey, Samson, how are you?
I'm not too bad, yourself?
I'm good. Listen, thanks a million for taking the call.
Yeah, no, good to speak to you again.
So it's been about a year since we last spoke. At that time, Taiwan had 7 fatalities. That was in July 2020. That was 6 months into the pandemic. And it stayed that way until about late January. Deaths only really got up into double figures by March. So, I mean, in brief, what kind of a year was it since we last spoke? It seems to have been very controlled and very quiet on the coronavirus front.
So for the large part, life was relatively untouched in Taiwan over the last year. Taiwan was in this strange bubble, watching the rest of the world deal with this incredibly tragic circumstances. But life in Taiwan was relatively unaffected in almost all fronts. Restaurants remained open, businesses remained open, schools remained open throughout. And there were concerts, there was stand-up comedy, there was theatre and everything. So we were all sitting here kind of living life as normal and occasionally remembering that, you know, we were in a very lucky, privileged position compared to most of the rest of the world.
And did the pandemic seem somewhat unreal, almost like maybe the way the Western world had viewed SARS and MERS when those outbreaks took place, that it was very much something that was happening somewhere else and not really affecting Taiwan?
Yeah, there was definitely that sense. So, and there was a definite sense of incredulity in certain aspects that, you know, much of Europe and North America had allowed this to get so bad because, you know, as you point out, Taiwan, Hong Kong, China, they've all been through serious outbreaks of this nature before. And so they were much more prepared, much more alert for stuff like this. And the public was just, you know, much more willing to go along and to take this incredibly seriously. And it wasn't like a lot of places, you know, that Europe and North America didn't have a warning. You know, this did break out in Asia again. And there were several months before it got to Europe and North America. And so the fact that other countries has had much longer to prepare for it as well, and then didn't, was definitely a source of much bewilderment in this part of the world.
So when did things begin to change? As the deaths only got into double figures, they breached 10 in March and stayed relatively stable until about May. So what happened in that period from March to May this year?
So Taiwan's entire strategy effectively had been keep it out in the first place. You know, like Ireland, Taiwan is an island, but Taiwan is incredibly close to China. And so Taiwan is always very alert for any kinds of outbreaks of things like this from China. And so Taiwan had been watching out for this. And then it took very, very quick action to stop it at the border. So flights from China or certain parts of China were barred very quickly. And then very quickly, Taiwan implemented quite strict immigration controls. And for people who were still allowed in or out, there was strict quarantine measures as well. And so that's what I think, you know, New Zealand has summed it up, the best way to keep it out, the best strategy against it is, you know, go early and go hard. And that's what Taiwan did. And that just managed to keep it out in the first place, largely. You had a very small number of cases in the first place. And so that allowed life inside Taiwan to go on as normal. Well, of course, the problem was, is that humans are humans. There will be failures. There will be mistakes at some point. And that appears that that's what happened at the border. Is we don't know exactly what happened, but there was some breakdown in the quarantine measures for airline pilots and how they were quarantined. So Taiwan is home to three major international airlines, and Taiwan is a major export economy. So Taiwan absolutely relies on air cargo to keep, you know, its technology exports flowing. And so in order to help the airlines continue to keep flying, they'd reduced the quarantine duration for airline pilots so that they could, you know, continue to have, you know, to keep getting back in the planes and keep flying overseas. And it appears that somehow, so the outbreak happened at a hotel that was quarantining airline pilots and then simply spread to the staff. And then once it's in, you know, as you know, it's in.
All right. Would you explain to the listener what a tea house is?
So tea houses, I mean, there are normal tea houses where you go and have tea, but it is a somewhat more euphemistic expression for what people might otherwise know as a hostess bar. So a place generally men go to enjoy the company of women. So, you know, usually in Taiwan, I'll be having a drink, having some, you know, flirtatious conversation. There might be some karaoke there. And then potentially also sexual services on sale as well. And so actually in this part of Taipei where I live, actually very close to where I live, there are a few slightly more unique versions of these tea houses that cater very much more to elderly gentlemen. So you're looking, you know, the typical clientele is in their 60s, 70s and 80s,
right,
who go there. And then typically the people who work there are also, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s as well. And so a lot of more elderly gentlemen hang out there. And of course, this is an industry where social distancing is just not possible, right? There's no point in going to a place like this if you're going to sit, you know,
two meters
away from somebody. So the
it's the antithesis of social distancing, really.
Exactly. So they were a key source of the spread. So once it got into this community, and obviously it takes a while, right? There is about a two-week delay between when infections happen and when you start seeing cases in a lot of cases. By the time that it had spread or people had noticed that, you know, this was a key source of infections, you know, by then it was already too late.
The British variant seems to, or the Kent variant, or the Alpha variant, depending on what name you want to give it, seems to have got in, and because it spreads rather quickly, that seems to have exacerbated the situation.
Yes, that is the one in Taiwan. So obviously, we're keeping a very close eye out for the various variants in Taiwan. So far, the predominant one does seem to be the British variant. But obviously, we're keeping a very close eye out for any other more transmissible variants that could potentially get in at some point. And part of the problem for Taiwan, right, is that because it had dealt so well with the pandemic up until this point, very few people are vaccinated here. And also nobody's had the virus and then gotten better. So nobody's immune to it either. And so you've just got a population that's in a very precarious position.
Right. I mean, I suppose we should put it in perspective. It's about 360 deaths at the moment. That climbed sharply in May. But the daily case rates are in the hundreds, in the 200 to 300. And at the moment, I think cumulative cases are about 11,000, 10,000 of which are active. So this is very recent spike. But relatively speaking, we're talking daily case rate numbers that are the same as Ireland and still, by global standards, a pretty low death rate. It's just been compressed into a short space of time.
Yeah, you're right. So Taiwan does take this very, very seriously. I think generally, you know, the public typically has, everybody still remembers SARS, for example, but also the government is aware that very few people are vaccinated here. So you do have a very vulnerable population in general. But as you say, people are taking quite strict measures against this at very low, relatively low rates of new cases and deaths. But I think one thing you are looking at is, like, as you say, like the daily caseload is very similar to Ireland, but Taiwan obviously has a much, much bigger population than Ireland. But if you look at deaths, right, like in Ireland, their daily deaths are very low, but in Taiwan we're you know, in the 20s every single day of new death. And that is because, you know, it has just happened. It has wrapped up very, very quickly. Obviously the more elderly, the weakest people are succumbing to it, obviously, but also almost nobody's vaccinated, and that's one issue that is making, you know, everybody much more susceptible to this.
And is there an issue with vaccination? Is there low vaccine uptake? Is there an issue with vaccine supply, or is it just not really been on people's priority list because they've escaped relatively unscathed so far?
That was the initial problem, is that Taiwan didn't have a massive demand for it. There were no cases here. Everybody could go about, you know, their daily lives without needing a vaccine. So why would you take it? And therefore, the government was relatively sanguine about competing with other nations to get the vaccine, and potentially paying quite a lot of money to jump the queue to be able to get it from your Pfizer's, your Moderna's, your AstraZeneca's. And so it does appear that the government was relatively relaxed, shall we say, in making sure that Taiwan got vaccines. But and then the small number of vaccines that Taiwan did manage to get before this latest outbreak, it was the AstraZeneca vaccine. And so obviously there are concerns about potential blood clots connected to that vaccine. And so people were initially very reluctant to take up the vaccine. But that obviously changed very, very quickly once this outbreak happened. You know, now you absolutely cannot get your name on a list to get the vaccine. So now it has definitely become an issue of Taiwan just cannot get hold of the vaccine fast enough.
I saw a doctor quoted, I think, in the BBC saying that people overlooked what would be common COVID symptoms in terms of seeking medical attention. They went, well, you know, it's possibly flu, cold-like symptoms, but to be honest, it's probably not COVID. I think it was bannered under the headline of the BBC, a tale of complacency. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I do. In fact, you know, we wrote a very similar story with a similar headline to be
right, okay.
So testing in Taiwan was very infrequent. Taiwan had this additional year to prepare for a potential outbreak, but it does seem that it spent a lot of that year just assuming that the virus would never make it to Taiwan. And so the testing capacity is still fairly low. They're ramping it up very quickly. But I mean, they do have some justification for not having tested very much. Certainly with the faster tests, the issue of the veracity of those tests is questionable. They do throw up a lot of false negatives and potentially false positives. And so the government was very concerned about using that kind of testing that would either, you know, devote scarce hospital resources to people that don't have the virus, or potentially even worse, allowing somebody who does have the virus out into the public to spread it. That was kind of the government justification for this. But testing levels were very low. It took a long time to get tests done. You know, Taiwan typically adopts the PCR testing, and so that does take up lab resources. You need technicians to be able to do it. And so obviously there is a constraint on the number of tests you can do very quickly.
What has been the effect on Taiwan? I mean, I suppose, first of all, from dealing with people out and about on the streets, has there been any noticeable psychological impact where people are taken aback by this new spike in cases, or is there still a relative level of complacency there?
No, people do take this very seriously. So the government put Taiwan into, you know, a form of soft lockdown. Schools are closed. Any recreational or entertainment venues, you know, bars, karaoke bars, cinemas,
the aforementioned gyms, tea houses,
swimming pools, tea houses, obviously too. They're all now shut down. Restaurants are only allowed to provide takeout services, and the government is asking companies to allow people to work from home. I think what that's a very interesting aspect of this is how few companies were prepared as well. As you know, on the one hand, you do have the government that has to make preparations, but obviously companies do as well.
Really,
and this has shown an economy
that has so much, you know, exports so much technology that would and did so well economically out of everyone else working from home, they were reluctant to put it in place themselves.
Exactly. So a lot of Taiwanese companies are either very traditional. You know, there is a strong Japanese influence in Taiwan. And so the concept of bums on seats is very strong among managers in Taiwan, typically. We've spoken to some of the biggest plastics makers, for example, so more traditional industries here. These are very old conservative companies that, and everything is still done by paper. And so they simply could not, you know, have people working from home. It wasn't possible for them. And then if you look at the high-tech industry and really, you know, Taiwan and your Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, that company is at the absolute cutting edge of chip manufacturing in the world. The security measures that that company implements on all its staff are incredibly rigorous. So, for example, like just entering their offices, you cannot take a phone in there. They do not let you take a phone, even as an employee. So they give every single employee a company phone that has no camera or internet functionality on it, for example. And so obviously companies like that are very, very reluctant to allow staff to take important sensitive documents home with them. So you've kind of got that those two competing factors, meaning that companies have been very slow here to offer working from home for most of their staff. So that has been something that we've been having to deal with here recently over the past few weeks.
And has there been a noticeable economic impact, or it's probably in a month too early to change forecasts, but I think when we spoke around this time last year, back in July, you were talking about the prediction that Taiwan's economy would grow of the order of 5% over the coming year, which was an outlier by comparison to most of the rest of the world.
So far, the economic signals continue to be incredibly strong. Yeah, in the year since we last spoke, so Taiwan's economy did end up growing just over 3% last year, which is pretty much the fastest among a developed economy anywhere in the world, certainly the fastest in Asia. And that was, as you point out, largely based on surging demand for, you know, iPads, laptops, and all the things that Taiwan makes from the rest of the world. And then Taiwan even benefited from this dual stream of places that were still heavily in lockdown. They wanted more iPads and stuff like that. Places that were opening up, you know, businesses were coming back online. They were buying more computers. They were building out their 5G networks, for example. And those are all things that Taiwan's companies feed into. And so Taiwan was just benefiting on both sides of the equation there. In the most recent data we have, you know, exports are still doing incredibly well. And that is the main driver of the economy in Taiwan. Obviously, you have F&B and the hospitality industry that is taking a big hit. But the government does generally feel that that's much easier to subsidize that area of the economy, you know, shut it down and then subsidize it to protect the, you know, the export economy and just keep Taiwan shipping out the chips.
Is the lab leak theory much of a topic of conversation in Taiwan as a matter of interest, seeing as they would have, you know, a unique relationship with their large neighbor, China?
Yes, very much. People do discuss it a lot. There's huge skepticism of anything and everything China says and does here. You know, there is zero trust in that relationship among, you know, much of the population. So, I mean, that feeds into why Taiwan reacted so quickly, because they did not believe anything China was saying about the initial signs of this virus initially. As for exactly how it emerged, I mean, Taiwan has no, you know, unique insight there, but, you know, they are watching very closely for, you know, this ongoing investigation to see whether or not we ever do get any clarity on how exactly it emerged.
And finally then, did your heart sink slightly when you heard the Kent variant was there, that people would be going to you as a Westerner saying, well, explain, how did this get here? Having those kinds of conversations.
I've been having to do that since the very beginning of this outbreak. Well, really? Or since it became very clear that, you know, Europe wasn't taking this as serious as much of Asia was at the time. I've got Taiwanese friends in the UK, and they were calling me up and just saying, you know, what is wrong with people in the UK? Like, why are they not taking this seriously. And so very since the very beginning, I felt that we have had to put on something of a performative, exaggerated display. I mean, I think it is important to let people know here that, look, I'm with you. I take this as seriously as you do. I'm not going to walk around without a mask on. We're all in this together. So it is important to, you know, simply the signal that, you know, taking seriously, taking, you know, personal hygiene seriously, taking mask wearing seriously here, and especially in a place that, you know, that is a very standard form of social etiquette that you also take part in that very, very strictly.
All right. Well, look, thanks for keeping the Western world's best side out, and thanks very much for talking to us on the Pandemic Podcast.
Not a problem. Happy to.
All right. Listen, thanks a million. Much appreciated. Thanks for your time.
Cheers. No, happy to talk.
And that's it for another episode. If you have any feedback or suggestions, you can get in touch with me by email on colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie, or on Twitter @colmomongain. Feel free to leave us a nice review on your podcast platform of choice. Recommend us to a friend or even the person next to you in the vaccine queue whenever your turn comes. But until next week, stay safe, take care, and thanks for listening.
Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing.